Hello, everybody. This is Scott Yates, Director of Communications and Producer Relations for the Washington Grain Commission, here with episode 109 of Wheat All About It, or what I've entitled, Speaking Up for the Wheat Industry on Stepping Down at the WSCIA, Observations of Jerry Robinson. About my conversation with an old friend during the annual meeting of the Washington State Crop Improvement Association in Moscow, Idaho, on November 12, 2018. I've known Robinson for upwards of 20 years, and during all that time, I've had nothing but positive interactions with him, even when dealing with contentious issues. He's never ducked a question, and I've always felt I could trust what he said. As manager of the WSCIA, he's occupied a unique position as an executive in charge of an organization with a separate but equal status to Washington State University and the Washington Grain Commission. I've always thought of Robinson as a consensus builder, but back in 2008, there was a moment when it felt like he was the tip of the spear. At a meeting of the Washington Wheat Commission that year, he reported to commissioners that the breeding program at WSU was on the wrong track. Perhaps it's true, as WSU said at the time, that changes were already in the works. But from my perspective, Robinson's words galvanized the university and the wheat community to ensure the state's wheat breeding program served all the state's wheat farmers. Listen ahead for that exchange. You'll also hear me refer to presentations I attended during the WSCIA meeting, during which breeding companies promoted their new releases to seedsmen, with varying degrees of attention to quality. But first, for those still confused about the WSCIA, what it is and what it does, Robinson explains.
Washington State Crop Improvement itself is I'm going to call it an umbrella organization. It's a not-for-profit corporation, and there's two main parts to the organization. The first part, which is probably our highest profile, is certification of seeds, primarily wheat, peas, lentils, garbs, barley. Those are our main ones that we do. We have some others that we do, but those are probably the main ones. So we do the certification, which is overseeing to make sure the companies are meeting certification requirements, tagging products, so on and so forth, as far as the certification program. The other main part of our program is, in conjunction with WSU and Oregon State University, we run the Foundation Seed Program off of campus right now, but that program is responsible for gathering or taking in the new products or the new breeding lines from WSU and OSU, whether it's barley or whether it's winter wheat or spring wheat, and increasing those and then actually distributing those out to the growers and the seed companies. We do some other things. We are responsible for forest reproductive material, which is certifying pine cones over on the west side. We have a promotion and education component, and then we have a county crop improvement component, but those are pretty minor as a whole. But that's kind of it in a nutshell, very briefly.
And you're responsible for Oregon's certified seed as well, is that correct?
For the Foundation Seed Program, yes. Historically, when Greg Vollmer, who was my predecessor for Foundation Seed, moved up to run the Foundation Seed Program here at WSU, Oregon shut their program down, and then basically by default, we ended up with their Foundation Seed Program, and I've been running it ever since.
Tell me about that seed plant you bought in Moses Lake. What is the plan with that seed plant? Why did you buy a seed plant?
Oh, glutton for punishment. No, actually, since I started with Crop Improvement as Foundation Seed Manager, 14 years ago, something like that, The seed plant on campus has always been a little bit in a question of how long it was going to exist. And at some point we felt that, or we knew that it was going to move. And when I started, it was going to be 10, 15, 20 years. And as we progressed, it got shorter and shorter. They put the PACCAR building right next to us. Now I think we're looking at just a short number of years, you know, 2 years to 4 years probably. We decided at this point, my board of directors decided that actually our customer base, our production base is all really in the Columbia Basin. And so the opportunity arose to purchase this plant at a reasonable price from CHS. It was one that they weren't using. And we put together a deal with them, and it sits right in the middle of our production and our sales area. It's close to the farm, the WSU farm, so we can move product to and from it. It was in a great location, a great price, and so it needs a little help, a little work, but I think it's going to be a great opportunity for us to serve our customers much better.
So how have royalties and PVPs and plant-back restrictions affected the industry? What are the positives and what are the negatives?
I think the positives are putting money back into the programs. I think that's probably one of the biggest, well, I know that's the reason they did it, you know, the major reason. I think with funding being cut on the state and federal levels on a lot of things, I think the biggest positive is the fact that that's money going back into the breeding programs. If it's not directly to the program itself, it's going into some, it's going into a form of supporting the program and some of its actual needs. Negatives, I think there's always that connotation that, well, I've already paid my dues to the Wheat Commission and I've already paid my dues and taxes and as a private citizen, and why are you charging me now? And that's, I understand that. But I'm not sure if it really holds a lot of water just simply for the fact that, okay, WSU variety or a, let's say a Syngenta variety, you're going to pay a royalty on a Syngenta. Why not pay a royalty on a WSU variety? It's kind of sixes. So I don't think there's any real negatives other than some grower perception. I think it's all positive, frankly.
Okay. All right. And this is just a question that sort of came to me as I was looking at the slides that the various presenters were putting up. You know, when they have good quality, they advertise the good quality on their rankings. And when they don't have good quality, there's nothing there about quality. And I got to say, I'm a little bit concerned about, you know, how quality is promoted among all of us, the publics and the privates. And I think that somehow we need to insist that quality be part of the parameters all the time.
And I agree with you, because there's been some real, you know, dogs out there as far as quality. And I think that when I have to give the Grain Commission a lot of credit for promoting that, and it's not necessarily an easy thing to promote, but I think it's just going to be a continual something that's going to have to be in the back of everybody's mind just continually, that you got to push the quality. And I think that's going to have to lay in the hands of the commissions to a certain degree and other entities, because frankly, everybody, whether it's WSU, OSU, or the privates, they're trying to make a buck. They're trying to get their variety out there, and they're going to overlook some of that stuff. So I think the neutral third party is going to have to hammer that home, to be honest.
Yes, indeed. Jerry, in preparation for this interview, I went back and I found a story I wrote about a presentation that you gave at what was then the Washington Wheat Commission in November 2008, 10 years ago. Woohoo, you have a history. You said, and I quote, "There is some concern that some of the WSU breeding programs are not addressing the needs of modern farmers and not addressing key areas of Washington State wheat production." This was 10 years ago. You also said that when it comes to WSU's breeding program, quote, the production of new and novel varieties of wheat of the state of Washington should be the first priority of these programs, not publishing papers, attending committees, or even teaching. So, now I have the question. As a close observer of WSU, are you happy with what's transpired over the last 10 years?
I think it's improved. I still struggle once in a while, but I'd forgot about that. I know the meeting, what you're talking about. I remember saying it, and I remember some gasps in the process. But at that time, what was happening is they were not fulfilling the need for the high rainfall, higher production areas. There was a breeder that felt that we needed to address the dry land areas, and I felt that needed to be addressed. And that not addressing the high rainfall allowed the privates a really strong foothold into the Northwest. And so that was kind of my primary concern there. And then I do believe, and I still do very strongly believe that, you know, if you've hired someone as a breeder, let them breed. Because frankly, if you're going to have a competitive breeding program, I don't care whether you're doing turnip seed or wheat, to have that person teaching and writing papers and writing grants and writing a lot of other not necessarily writing, but doing other projects. And I understand academia, that's not necessarily always, it's easier said than done. But I think they have to release their breeders to do breeding, not all this other stuff. I think they are a valuable tool for students to learn from. And teaching, I think, you know, is probably something that needs to be integrated in that. But I really think they need to let them breed, because that's what a breeder for a private firm does. He does nothing but breed. And how can you compete if you really only have a half-time breeder? Because he's doing all these other projects, you know, half of his time. And that was kind of the thrust of that whole conversation. And I still think they need to improve on that, to be honest.
Well, the other thing that really struck me about the article that I went back and found is the fact that you were even commenting about WSU's program. And I find it a little, well, I mean, would you have been as forthright if you were talking about Syngenta or Westbred?
yeah, loaded question. I probably wouldn't have been. You know, because at that time, to be quite honest, we were not doing much with Syngenta. We were not doing we weren't doing anything. We were doing a little bit with Westbred at the time. And I could see this WSU was sliding over. You know, from the time that I started as foundation seed manager to the time that I was manager, we'd lost a fair amount of foothold in our own state. And, you know, maybe now with me working and trying to be more neutral, I probably wouldn't be quite as forthright, but I still have my conversations with WSU and what I think might be better for them. And like I said, I'm not quite as outspoken as I am more quietly outspoken, I guess. Let me put it that way.
All right. Back to the question. Is there an average age of varieties nowadays? I mean, are we looking at them being out there for 5 years, for 10 years?
I've not really looked at age, but I'm just kind of thinking back on the varieties and where they're going. I'm going to say, I bet you 5 years is a good average, you know, because typically what you're going to do is you're going to have, 1-2 years of pretty good sales, or they're going to be marginal sales because you don't have the seed stock. You're going to saturate it. And then it usually tapers off. You know, if it's a barn burner variety, maybe it might go 7 years, but there's always something to seem to replace it. So if I had to say a guess, I would say 5 years is probably a pretty good average right now.
So we will never see varieties like Matson or L10 again?
I would say I doubt it. There might be an anomaly out there. But I think what you're going to see is you're going to see varieties. I think once they went to the, this is personal opinion, once they went to the PVP, Title V, royalty, people have a tendency to say, okay, I'm having to pay a royalty for this. I'm having to pay more money for this variety. I'm going to find a better variety. And I think when you were looking at public varieties that, you know, it costs you X amount of dollars per bushel, doesn't really matter. They would grow those, and those varieties hang around for 20, 25 years. But I think that's pretty well done because of the royalty situation.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Washington farmers use more certified seed than any other state in the nation at around 90%. Why?
That's a good question. I think it's a number of reasons. I think one of it's a little bit of marketing, you know, that a high quality, high value seed and you're getting the biggest bang for your buck. I think that part of it is the fact that a lot of these varieties have to be sold as certified seeds. So there's a little of that. I also think that it was originally brought about by farmers wanting good quality seed, no goat grass, no noxious weeds, and they've gotten used to having a high quality product, and they see a value in it. They see a value in yield returns. They see a value in quality of the variety. They see a value in the purity of the variety that they're putting in the ground. So, I think a lot of it's they see there's a very good perceived value in certified seed.
Is there a figure in terms of increased yield that you can ascribe to certified varieties?
I've seen some stuff. Syngenta did a thing. John Moffitt had a thing that he had put together. And, you know, it's 2 to 3 bushel was the one that John had. I don't know where it truly is. We've tried to do, and Karen and or Lauren and I were trying to do, or Lauren was actually trying to do a drill box survey to try and figure if we could figure that out. And it's a little bit loose, you know, and I don't think anybody really has a real, this is a statistically solid number, but, you know, it seems to be that 2 to 3 bushel, maybe a little more in some varieties.
Okay, so if you are getting 2 to 3 bushels more, and 90% of the growers in the state are using certified varieties, why are 10% of the growers not using certified varieties?
A combination. Some of them, most of those guys are in very low production areas. Seed's getting expensive. It's a habit, partially. You know, I've saved my seed. You know, my dad saved his seed, and we're going to continue to save our seed. So you got a little bit of a habit there. You're in a low production area. There's a perception that by saving your own seed that you're saving lots of money, and they don't want to pay for that little extra to have somebody else clean it. And some of it just is logistics. It's easier for them to do it on their farm because maybe it's 30, 40 miles to the nearest seed dealer. So kind of a combination of things.
So what is in the future for the WSCIA? I mean, one could ask the question, is there a future for the WSCIA with all of these privates involved? And whether or not they continue to use you, I mean, won't that have an impact on your future?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I think the privates at this point are extremely committed, or they've told me they're committed, and I see it. They are very committed to certification. So that aspect, I think we're in very good shape. You know, I think certification is always going to be a necessary part of the whole equation. I think we're going to always be viable and relevant because of certification. Foundation seed, I think, is going to always be an evolving process. And that's why I want to go back to working on it, because I think we have provided a program, and I want to improve it, a program that the privates as well as the publics can use us for increasing and working with different entities to get things put together and make it where you get a good product for a good price. And so I think we've got to look at different things. Right now we're license holders for what is it, about five or six varieties out of the USDA for peas and lentils. So we're working in Montana, North Dakota, Nebraska, as far as pulse crops. So, you know, it's a little different venue, but that's, you know, we're doing different things and trying to remain relevant at all times.
How are winter peas going to change things if we actually do have this revolution of having winter peas planted on the summer fallow areas?
I think it's going to be, I'm not going to say revolutionary because I don't want to get quite that far down the road, but I think it's going to, it could be a game changer. I know that some of my customers in Montana are waiting for that. I know Rebecca, the plant breeder, Rebecca McGee, the plant breeder there at the USDA in Pullman, feels very positive that their food grade, we're looking at 4,000 to 6,000 pound yields. Winter hardiness seems to be there. So I think it could be a game changer in this area too. I'm hoping that it will be. I think the jury's still out though. But I think it could be a very significant change in the farming of this area.
So you're retiring, but you're really not retiring. So we're still going to have Jerry Robinson to kick around. Is that right?
A little bit. A little bit. Like I said, I'm turning over the management the end of December. And then I'm going to work about halftime, probably quarter to halftime with Foundation Seed. My wife wanted me to continue to do that because she didn't want me underfoot. So
yes, yes. They marry you for life, not for lunch.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point. I hadn't thought about that one.
Both Jerry and I are baby boomers. That is, individuals born between 1946 and 1964. And it's estimated about 10,000 of us a day are retiring. Robinson isn't pulling the pin completely, as you just heard. He's coasting into retirement by reducing some job responsibilities and focusing on the WSCIA's Foundation Seed program. It sounds like a great approach for those who are still in good health and have something to offer. As for myself, never fear, I consider my job as Director of Communications and Producer Relations the white lines on the highway of my life, keeping me in my lane and out of the ditch. It sounds to me like Robinson's pre-retirement will allow him to continue to contribute to the industry he loves, but without as many of the headaches that come from being top dog. Robinson's replacement as manager of the WSCIA took over on January 1, 2019. She is Lauren Port, who has served as certification and field supervisor for 3 years before being elevated to her current position. Robinson has no doubt she will do well. That's all the time we have. I hope you've enjoyed episode 109, which I entitled Speaking Up for the Wheat Industry on Stepping Down at the WSCIA. Observations of Jerry Robinson. Please join me again next week for another episode of the Washington Grain Commission-sponsored podcast, Wheat All About It!
Out in the country where a woman's called a gal, she's more than a lover, she's a farmer's best pal. We marry them for life, we marry with a vow, and even in the night we know how to plow. Our children have two parents, our children have a home. They don't grow up with no edible syndrome. We're the backbone of this country, the spirit of its soul. Best you ask for whom the bell tolls. We feed you. We feed you.